Lou, the Prophet, by Willa Cather, 1892, as read by Alex Wilson. It had been a very trying summer to everyone, and most of all to Lou. He had been in the West for 7 years, but he had never quite gotten over his homesickness for Denmark. Among the northern people who emigrate to the Wild West, only the children and the old people ever long much for the lands they have left over the water. The men only know that in this new land their plow runs across the field, tearing up the fresh, warm earth with never a stone to stay its course. That if they dig and delve the land long enough, and if they are not compelled to mortgage it to keep body and soul together, some day it will be theirs, their very own. They are not like the southern people. They lose their love for their fatherland quicker and have less of a sentiment about them. They have to think too much about how they shall get bread to care much what soil gives it to them. But among even the most blunted mechanical people, the youths and the aged always have a touch of romance in them. Lou was only 22. He had been but a boy when his family left Denmark, and had never ceased to remember it. He was a rather simple fellow, and was always considered less promising than his brothers, but last year he had taken up a claim of his own, and made a rough dugout upon it, and he lived there all alone. His life was that of many another young man in our country. He rose early in the morning, in the summer just before daybreak, in the winter long before. First he fed his stock, then himself, which was a much less important matter. He ate the same food at dinner that he ate at breakfast, and the same at supper that he ate at dinner. His bill of fare never changed the year round: bread, coffee, beans, and sorghum molasses, sometimes a little salted pork. After breakfast he worked until dinner, ate, and then worked again. He always went to bed soon after the sunset, for he was always tired, and it saved oil. Sometimes, on Sundays, he would go over home after he had done his washing and house cleaning, and sometimes he hunted. His life was as sane and as uneventful as the life of his plow horses, and it was as hard and thankless. He was thrifty for a simple, thick-headed fellow, and in the spring he was to have married Nell Sorensen's daughter. But he had lost all his cattle during the winter, and was not so prosperous as he had hoped to be. So instead she married her cousin, who had an 80 of his own. That hurt Lou more than anyone ever dreamed. A few weeks later his mother died. He had always loved his mother. She had been kind to him, and used to come over to see him sometimes, and shake up his hard bed for him, and sweep, and make his bread. She had a strong affection for the boy. He was her youngest, and she always felt sorry for him. She had danced a great deal before his birth, and an old woman in Denmark had told her that that was the cause of the boy's weak head. Perhaps the greatest calamity of all was the threatened loss of his corn crop. He had bought a new corn planter on time that spring, and had intended that his corn should pay for it. Now it looked as though he would not have corn enough to feed his horses. Unless rain fell within the next 2 weeks, his entire crop would be ruined. It was half gone now. All these things together were too much for poor Lou, and one morning he felt a strange loathing for the bread and sorghum which he usually ate as mechanically as he slept. He kept thinking about the strawberries he used to gather on the mountains after the snows were gone and the cold water in the mountain streams. He felt hot some way and wanted cold water. He had no well, and he hauled his water from a neighbor's well every Sunday, and it got warm in the barrels those hot summer days. He worked at his haying all day. At night, when he was through feeding, he stood a long time by the pigsty with a basket on his arm. When the moon came up, he sighed restlessly and tore the buffalo pea flowers with his bare toes. After a while, he put his basket away and went into his hot, close little dugout. He did not sleep well, and he dreamed a horrible dream. He thought he saw the devil and all his angels in the air holding back the rain clouds, and they loosed all the damned in hell, and they came, poor tortured things, and drank up whole clouds of rain. Then he thought a strange light shone from the south, just over the river bluffs, and the clouds parted, and Christ and all his angels were descending. They were coming, coming, myriads and myriads of them, in a great blaze of glory. Then he felt something give way in his poor, weak head, and with a cry of pain, he awoke. He lay shuddering a long time in the dark, then got up and lit his lantern, and took from the shelf his mother's Bible. It opened of itself at Revelation, and Lou began to read, slowly indeed, for it was hard work for him. Page by page he read those burning, blinding, blasting words, and they seemed to shrivel up his poor brain altogether. At last, the book slipped from his hands, and he sank down upon his knees in prayer, and stayed so until the dull gray dawn stole over the land and he heard the pigs clamoring for their feed. He worked about the place until noon, and then prayed and read again. So he went on several days, praying and reading and fasting, until he grew thin and haggard. Nature did not comfort him any. He knew nothing about nature. He had never seen her. He had only stared into a black plow furrow all his life. Before, he had only seen in the wide green lands and the open blue the possibilities of earning his bread. Now he only saw in them a great world ready for the judgment, a funeral pyre ready for the torch. One morning he went over to the big prairie dog town where several little Danish boys herded their father's cattle. The boys were very fond of Lou. He had never teased them as the other men did, but used to help them with their cattle and let them come over to his dugout to make sorghum taffy. When they saw him coming, they ran to meet him and asked him where he had been all these days. He did not answer their questions, but said, "Come into the cave. I want to see you." Some 6 or 8 boys herded near the dog town every summer, and by their combined efforts they had dug a cave in the side of a high bank. It was large enough to hold them all comfortably and high enough to stand in. There the boys used to go when it rained or when it was cold in the fall. They followed Lou silently and sat down on the floor. Lou stood up and looked tenderly down into the little faces before him. They were old-faced little fellows, though they were not over 12 or 13 years old. Hard work matures boys quickly. "Boys," he said earnestly, "I have found out why it don't rain. It's because of the sins of the world. You don't know how wicked the world is. It's all bad. All, even Denmark. People have been sinning a long time, but they won't much longer. God has been watching and watching for thousands of years and filling up the files of wrath, and now he is going to pour out his vengeance and let hell loose upon the world. He is burning up our corn now, and worse things will happen, for the sun shall be as sackcloth, and the moon shall be like blood, and the stars of heaven shall fall, and the heavens shall part like a scroll, and the mountains shall be moved out of their places, and the great day of his wrath shall come, against which none may stand. Oh, boys, the floods and the flames shall come down upon us together, and the whole world will perish." Lou paused for breath, and the little boys gazed at him in wonder. The sweat was running down his haggard face, and his eyes were staring wildly. Presently he resumed, in a softer tone, "Boys, if you want rain, there is only one way to get it, by prayer. The people of the world won't pray. Perhaps if they did, God would not hear them, for they are so wicked. But he will hear you. For you are little children, and are likened unto the kingdom of heaven, and he loved ye." Lou's haggard, unshaven face bent toward them, and his blue eyes gazed at them with terrible earnestness.
"Show us how, Lou,"
said one little fellow in an awed whisper. Lou knelt down in the cave, his long, shaggy hair hung down over his face, and his voice trembled as he spoke. "Oh, God, they call thee many long names in thy book, thy prophets, but we are only simple folk. The boys are all little, and I am weak-headed ever since I was born. Therefore let us call thee Father, for thy other names are hard to remember. Oh, Father, we are so thirsty, all the world is thirsty. The creeks are all dried up, and the river is so low that the fishes die and rot in it. The corn is almost gone. The hay is light, and even the little flowers are no more beautiful. Oh, God, our corn may yet be saved. Oh, give us rain. Our corn means so much to us. If it fails, all our pigs and cattle will die, and we ourselves come very near it. But if you do not send rain, O Father, and if the end is indeed come, be merciful to thy great wicked world. They do many wrong things, but I think they forget thy word, for it is a long book to remember, and some are little, and some are born weak-headed like me, and some are born very strong-headed, which is near as bad. Oh, forgive them their abominations in all the world, both in Denmark and here, for the fire hurts so, O God. Amen." The little boys knelt and each said a few blundering words. Outside, the sun shone brightly and the cattle nibbled on the short, dry grass and the hot wind blew through the shriveled corn. Within the cave, they knelt as many another had knelt before them, some in temples, some in prison cells, some in the caves of the earth, and one, indeed, in the garden, praying for the sin of the world. The next day, Lou went to town and prayed in the streets. When the people saw his emaciated frame and wild eyes and heard his wild words, they told the sheriff to do his duty. The man must be mad. Then Lou ran away. He ran for miles, then walked and limped and stumbled on until he reached the cave, where the boys found him in the morning. The officials hunted him for days, but he hid in the cave, and the little Danes kept his secret well. They shared their dinners with him and prayed with him all day long. They had always liked him, but now they would have gone straight through fire for him, any one of them. They almost worshipped him. He had about him that mysticism which always appeals so quickly to children. I have always thought that bear story which the Hebrews used to tell their children very improbable. If it was true, then I have my doubts about the prophet. No one in the world will hoot at insincere and affected piety sooner than a child, but no one feels the true prophetic flame quicker. No one is more readily touched by simple goodness. A very young child can tell a sincere man better than any phrenologist. One morning he told the boys that he had had another true dream. He was not going to die like other men, but God was going to take him to himself as he was. The end of the world was close at hand, too very close. He prayed more than usual that day, and when they sat eating their dinner in the sunshine, he suddenly sprang to his feet and stared wildly south, crying, "See, see, it is the great light. The end comes, and they do not know it. They will keep on sinning. I must tell them. I must."
"No, no, Lou, they will catch you. They are looking for you. You must not go."
"I must go, my boys. But first let me speak once more to you. Men would not heed me or believe me because my head is weak, but you have always believed in me. that God has revealed his word to me, and I will pray God to take you to himself quickly, for ye are worthy. Watch and pray always, boys. Watch the light over the bluffs. It is breaking, breaking, and shall grow brighter. Goodbye, my boys. I must leave ye in the world yet a while. He kissed them all tenderly, and blessed them, and started south. He walked at first, then he ran, faster and faster he went, all the while shouting at the top of his voice, "The sword of the Lord and of Gideon!" The police officers heard of it, and set out to find him. They hunted the country over, and even dragged the river, but they never found him again, living or dead. It is thought that he was drowned, and the quicksands of the river sucked his body under. But the little Dane boys in our country firmly believe that he was translated like Enoch of old. On stormy nights, when the great winds sweep down from the north, they huddle together in their beds, and fancy that in the wind they still hear that wild cry, "The sword of the Lord and of Gideon!" This recording was produced by Telltale Weekly.